Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
So, guys, some of you might think this is a Super Bowl episode, and it definitely is. This is the last episode we're recording before the Super Bowl. But we got a lot to talk about. We got to talk about Kyrie and his Shrine Bowl experience, his Bears, what's going on with the Patriots front office. We got a lot to discuss here tonight. But first off, we were going into a story because there's a player that has ties to now the NFL, because last year, Toronto Argonauts had DB Quantes Diggers, no college experience. Now, he won CFL Rookie of the Year on the defensive side last year. He's making the jump to get drafted. And Kyrie's got the story from McGarvin on how Quantes, no college experience, how it's all playing out.
Yeah, so he ended up being, Quantes Diggers ended up being one of the most interesting players down at the Shrine Bowl. And I want to preface this by saying the guy played really well. I mean, I got a number of pass breakups and solid plays from him on video. Clearly, like, he looks like, I mean, yeah, the college experience, maybe not necessarily there, but you also think about the fact that he was playing against, like, professionals.
Yeah.
Right. And it showed. He looked like one of the more polished and kind of like experienced guys out there. Just kind of carried himself a little bit differently, I think, because of that. But, you know, this young man, Quantes Diggers. So I was just reading up on him a little bit. First of all, came from a really big family. 13 kids, which is, yeah, I know, right? So his brother, one of his brothers, I mean, he's been through a lot, man, Quantes Diggers. One of his brothers had a horrible injury playing football, spinal cord injury, you know, ended up being a quadriplegic. And Stigger's father had a really serious car accident, actually almost exactly 4 years ago. So February 14th, Valentine's Day of 2020. And he died later in 2020. And, you know, that happened when he was at, when Stiggers was at Lane College. So it's like he was going to college to play football, right?
Yeah.
But he kind of spiraled as a result of his father's death and dropped out. And so he was out of school, he kind of given up football. But his mother encouraged him to get back into the game. And so that's how he ended up at the fan-controlled football league, which is where, like, Josh Gordon ended up for a minute before getting a shot to latch onto an NFL roster, and then from there made his way to the Toronto Argonauts. And, you know, he tried out for the CFL, Argonauts signed him, and then he ends up being Rookie of the Year, right? I mean, and there's, like, it's just a really interesting story, man. Like, a lot of people just thought he was going to get cut, like he wasn't going to make the team, and he makes the team, makes the roster, and is a most outstanding rookie, CFL All-Star. I mean, come on, man. Like, that, it's just a hell of a story of perseverance. And you just know, whether it's as a UDFA or a guy who gets drafted, somebody's going to look at his story and be like, I want that guy on my team.
Yeah.
Now, And that's something I'm sure we're going to talk about in relation to the draft. You're not just drafting the talent. You're not just drafting the arm or how fast a guy runs the 40. You're drafting the person. Because, yeah, you can project upside all you want with a guy's talent and what they can do on the football field. But the drive to get better and the perseverance to overcome bad times.
Yep.
That's stuff that is really hard to quantify. And that, I feel like, more so than anything, is why the draft is a crapshoot. Because you can see a guy's talent. And sometimes guys' weaknesses get exposed or whatever in the league, and they don't come out, you know, to be what they're supposed to be. But I feel like so often, man, what happens the most is you get a guy in the league and he can't get better. The game is too much for them mentally. They don't have the work ethic, and they crater when bad stuff happens. And I think that when you look at a guy like Stiggers, whether or not he has a long NFL career or not, he's going to make somebody's roster at some point. He's going to play in the league. He's going to play some snaps. Somebody is going to put him on the field.
That's exactly it, because I feel like with the NFL draft too, they always, like, I don't know why it is, but ESPN's done it for years as well, where they'll look for a story where, hey, here's a kid getting drafted, and now here's every horrifying event that he's experienced throughout his life. I don't know why.
That's every other person. You know, it's trauma porn.
Exactly. It's like, here's this player and all his football ability. Oh, and here's the story about his uncle who was killed in a drive-by shooting when he was 8 years old, and he saw, like, and witnessed it. Like, they'll really dig deep for, like, those trauma porn stories.
And I mean, it, you know, Quantes Stiggers gets drafted, or you know, in any point. I mean, obviously, because his story is so interesting, because he's kind of going like the NBA route, right? Playing in college, you know, going off the pros or whatever, and you know, coming into the league. Like, his story is gonna come up during draft time, because it is unique. But I think again, what you evaluate from that is not just the, oh my goodness, you know, what horrible things happened, but the fact that he overcame and again rediscovered the fact that he's a good football player.
That's a hell of a story. Do we know where he's projected to go, like, you know, round wise?
I mean, he's a day three pick.
I'm assuming, you know, round, fifth round, kind of like Kenny Robinson, who played in the XFL before. Like, he came out of West Virginia, played in the XFL, and then was drafted by the Panthers, like the same year, right after the XFL folded. And that was really interesting. And, you know, everyone was like, oh yeah, this guy's going to go real high. He's really good, because he was really good for the Battlehawks. And then he ended up going fifth round, you know, kind of bounced around a bit, played with the Steelers this past summer. And now he's with the you know, my Birmingham Stallions in the new UFL. So I'm super curious to see where Diggers goes, because it feels like out of nowhere, like maybe 3 weeks ago, like the general football populace, and by that I mean like national reporters, got hold of the story and they were like, yeah, watch out for this guy. So I'm curious. It sounds like, you know, he's the kind of player that like will be really easy to root for, and I think that'll make it a lot easier for him to stick, right? If you're choosing between him and someone who may not, you know, who may have slightly better skills or whatever the case may be, you may end up going with him because he's easy to root for, and he's someone that you know will overcome whatever trials and tribulations come with being in the NFL, especially as a rookie, you know, who hasn't played, you know, college ball. So I'm personally interested in that now as well.
And a rookie with something to prove as well, the chip on the shoulder effect.
Definitely. I mean, I see him as probably like he's definitely day three. I mean, I'm looking at him more sixth or seventh round, just because I think teams are going to look at it and be like, okay, cool, we played in the CFL. That's interesting. You played against pros, but just how much experience do you have? Because again, like a bunch of these guys have been playing football for several years on end, at high level competition. And so I think that they're probably going to be like, we'll see. But again, the sixth and seventh round are those guys where you're thinking to yourself, okay, this dude as an undrafted free agent, you know, might be kind of in demand. So let's go ahead and draft him now and just go for it. And again, I just feel like he's going to get in a room with somebody and they're just going to be like, this, I need this guy on my team. You know, I want it. I want it. Because, I mean, it's not even just like, oh yeah, the cover skills or, you know, what have you, but dudes out there making tackles on special teams in the Shrine Bowl. I mean, come on, man. Like what more do you want? You know, out of a guy who's going to fill out the back end of your roster. He's doing everything he needs to do.
That's exactly it. It's those kind of guys where, look, if you can make a simple impact play on special teams, someone's going to see that and say, hey, we can use him in kick returns. We can use him in kickoff defense. Like, when you're the team either receiving the ball or whether you're on kickoff, kick return, whether it be it, it's just, look, get in there, carve a name for yourself, and find a pathway to success. But anyway, gentlemen, like we were talking about earlier, some fun news in New England going down. Obviously, look, The roles are pretty much assessed. Ian Rappaport had the original report, but McGarvin, one of our new podcast co-mates, obviously we know Miss Sophie Weller, also broke it down very well. Why? Because we have some of our Patriot Reporter friends. Do we want to call it the Wolf of Foxborough? Do we want to call it the Wolf of Patriot Place? Like, what are we doing and thinking about Elliot Wolf being the unofficial official GM of the Patriots?
I don't know. It kind of felt like that was the obvious route.
Yeah.
As of like 3 or 4 weeks ago, once it was clear that, you know, Matt Groh was going to remain in his role as, like, you know, the quote unquote scout, the head of the scouting department. He's the, you know, the director of player personnel.
Right.
Essentially, he's the super scout. You know what I mean? He yes. takes care of the, you know, of the draft and all that. Once that became clear, I was like, all right, well, if they're having him do that, if they're like, hey, you're going to be our guy looking at the, you know, at player acquisition and all that, then I'm like, all right, well, who's the other guy? There's someone who has to do all the office, you know, the front office type of stuff. Yeah. And it became very clear early on that that was going to be Elliot Wolf. That's fine. I liked what he did in Green Bay. I wasn't super familiar with him in Cleveland. I know a lot of people are like, oh, yeah, he did a lot of good work in Cleveland. I don't know, beats me. Cleveland isn't a team that I really follow all too closely. But it felt like that was the direction they're going. And some of the hires kind of reflect that. I know some people, you know, are really salty about it. You know, oh, he's just bringing in his guys, or, oh, Gerard's not even getting to pick his own staff, or whatever, you know, whatever the case is there. But I think it's, you know, I want to see it not work before I have some shit to talk, because right now it would just be all speculative.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think what's interesting is that, you know, the way they framed a lot of this stuff is that really we just needed to get Bill Belichick out of the way and let other people cook is essentially what they're saying, right? I mean, they didn't turn over the scouting department, or they didn't get Elliot Wolf and bring in a new GM. They were literally just like, hey, look, I think the rest of these guys are pretty sound process. It's just this dude has an antiquated process. Also on the sidelines, we need a new voice, and Gerard Mayo's ready to go. I think what's interesting is that, you know, people are kind of wondering, like, okay, because Bill Belichick had all this power, what's Gerard Mayo going to have? And, oh, wait, oh, they're not giving Gerard Mayo all the power out of the gate? Like, what's going on with this? But I think what we've learned through reports from a number of different people is Bill Belichick did not start off with that power.
Nope.
He did not have that power the entire time. It was after that third Super Bowl. Robert Kraft actually said this, I believe, later on. Like, I want to say it was after announcing that Bill Belichick was parting ways, you know, with the organization, kind of in that later comeback press conference when it was just Kraft by himself. And he said that Belichick didn't get that personnel power until after the third Super Bowl. So it's like when they had the dynasty, you know what I mean? Then it was Bill Belichick has control over everything. And so obviously that's a very long time of him having all that control. I mean, what is that? 18 years? Something like that?
18, 19 years.
Yeah, 18, 19 years of him having complete control. So I think, oh, okay. But the whole point of that is you let Gerard Mayo earn that. And if he doesn't, that's also okay. Most teams have their head coach not being the general manager also. I tend to look very askance at teams that do that. I feel like it's kind of a recipe for disaster to have the head coach have that level of power, especially if they haven't proven that they deserve it. Like, for example, somebody like, I don't know, like John Gruden, honestly, like when that happened a couple years ago, the Raiders hired him like a 10-year deal. And it's just like, it basically, he's just the de facto GM as well. And personnel control is like, this is going to go bad. And it went bad within, did he even make it 3 years? I can't even remember. He definitely didn't make it 4 years. He was out by then.
Three and a half, I think it was.
Yeah. But I mean, this is how most organizations do it. You know, and Elliot Wolf has a lot of experience. He's come up through the ranks with a good organization in the Green Bay Packers.
Yep.
An organization that knows how to draft and knows how to scout. And, you know, I think that it's fair to have him in that position as, you know, kind of this experienced counterbalance to Gerard Mayo, who I think is very intelligent and I think he's going to be pretty good at his job. But again, this part he hasn't had as much experience with. And look, even Bill Belichick, right? When he first came into the Patriots job, he'd already been a head coach before, so this wasn't entirely new to him. But he comes into the Patriots job, and he's got Charlie Weiss and Romeo Crennel running his offense and defense. He didn't go out and find those guys. They were already there. So having experience or and guys that you know you can believe in, know that you can trust already in place, that's big without having to try to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, and I think people forget with Belichick, he came in, he had Scott Pioli for that, you know, yep. immediately, that 2001 mm-hmm. year they went out and won the Super Bowl, and mm-hmm. Pioli was there another 7 years after that. And I know, you know, Kraft said it wasn't until after the third Super Bowl, but Pioli didn't leave until 2008, 2007. So I would be hesitant to say like, oh, Bill immediately got the, you know, 2005, Bill started running the show. I would say he, you know, he ran it with, you know, I know the big word around here lately has been collaborative. I think he ran it collaboratively with Scott Pioli until, you know, Pioli moved on. Mm-hmm. And I think it'll be the same thing with Jerod Mayo. I will say though, that it's an interesting move to, you know, keep all the same people around and, you know, just have Jerod in the driver's seat. If only because it puts you in a bad spot if things don't change, right? Because at that point, you know, then you start having the argument, oh, well, Bill was a scapegoat. And I don't necessarily think that was the case, even though I was against his firing. I don't necessarily think he was a scapegoat. I think he played a very big part in why he's no longer here, obviously.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But I think if things don't change, right, if they go out there and, you know, the player acquisition process doesn't change, right, they're still kind of – lowballing on some of the free agent offers, or some of the draft picks still have you going, why him then, why him now, kind of thing. I think if that remains the same, then at that point you're going to have a lot of people, and we've already kind of seen it. I don't know if y'all have definitely seen it, and especially you, Kyrie, because you know you're on the beat. So every post on every tweet you send out, I'm sure, is full of snarky Sammys in the comments, like, oh yeah, fucking cheap ass Kraft and Jonathan this and Robin Glazer that, and people are going to then start turning on, you know, the Krafts.
Just talk about that. I love the columnists being all like, where was Jonathan Kraft at Jerod Mayo's announcement? And it's like, you had Robert Kraft, the guy who runs the organization.
You had Big Daddy Kraft.
Yeah, he was there. Jonathan Kraft. Yeah, big. Yeah, exactly. You know, young Thundercat was there. Okay. Jonathan Kraft probably had other things to do running the rest of the Kraft organization. Like really, is this what we're going to spend all our time doing? It's just like, Jonathan Kraft, why wasn't he there? And it's like, Daddy's here. Okay. He still has a hold of his mental faculties. He might not be able to say the name Shermont, but you know what? We can deal with that. Okay. Jerod was there to help him out. I agree with you, man. It's just, people want to be mad about stuff.
Yeah.
It's a fickle fan base.
Of course. And again, you've already created this divide where people who feel like Bill was, you know, unfairly let go, or he was sandbagged. I know that that's kind of a popular take right now, that, oh, they had already planned on moving on from him and nothing would have changed anyway. They, you know, they're moving on, they're scapegoating him and all that. And like I said, I don't agree with that. But I do think it's a bold decision to keep all the same faces in place, and we'll see if things change. I mean, at least on the offensive side, we've seen signs of change. So that's good. That's encouraging. Even though for some reason, people who were complaining, hey, we need new faces in here, are now complaining, hey, not those faces. And I'm like, you know, it's kind of how it goes, right? Everyone wants change, but not the change they get. They bring in, you know, Alex Van Pelt, and, you know, people are like, oh, but Cleveland fired him, so obviously he sucks. They're going to bring in Peters as the O-line coach. Oh, Cleveland fired him, obviously he sucks. They bring in Ben McAdoo, and they're like, oh, the guy with the hair, obviously he sucks. And it's just like, all right, like, let's see it not work before we get our pitchforks and axes. Like, I mean, if it doesn't work, I'm sure I'll be out there with y'all. But right now, it is – you know, February 7th, the Super Bowl hasn't even been played. The season is legitimately not even over. Like, the season is not technically over yet. We need to slow down. We need to relax on all of the hate. It is so much vitriol on Patriots Twitter right now with regards to every personnel move. And it's absurd because there are some – I like to think I'm a knowledgeable fellow. I personally think that. And there are things that I don't know that people seem to have very strong opinions on. And I'm like, how do you know? Like, how do you know that? I've seen it with a lot of fan bases. I know that last week the Jaguars hired hired someone from the Titans coaching staff, or the Titans hired someone from the Jaguars coaching staff, their wide receiver coach or whatever. And people were like, "Oh yeah, his philosophy is going to be great." And you know, John Shipley, who covers the Jaguars down there, he pointed out like, "Well, how would you know? He's a wide receiver. There's legitimately no way you would know that." And I'm like, "Thank you. God damn, thank you." And it was the same kind of thing with the GMs. And I know how it happened.
Nick Holes, right? As the offensive coordinator.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just like, I know how it happens. It just infuriates me because people pretend and it irks me. Because if I don't know something, I will just say I don't know. Yeah. You know what I mean? When Adam Peters got hired to Washington, you know, the Patriots fans were very upset. And I had to ask the question, like, well, who is this guy and why are we so upset? Like, what's on his resume that's like, because everyone's obviously very upset. So y'all must see something that I don't see. And no one could give me an answer because no one really knows. They just know, hey, he worked on that team that's really good. And so therefore, he's obviously really good. And I just don't like that way of thinking, especially because when it flips, it's just as dumb. Oh, well, he worked for a bad team and he's obviously bad. It infuriates me. So like, across the board with every hire the Patriots have made, it's just so dumb because they're like, oh, well, if he's so good, why was he fired? Like, good guys get fired all the time. Shut up.
Yeah. Bill Belichick got fired.
Hello?
Pete Carroll got fired.
Pete Carroll got fired.
Mike Vrabel is without a job right now. Right now, he has no job.
Well, that's the funny thing, though, is that Mike Vrabel got fired or let go or, you know, whatever it is.
Usually,
people were begging for Mike Vrabel to get hired here and are mad that Gerard Mayo got hired without interviewing Mike Vrabel. Real quick, I just want to say, because I love to see it, sources are saying, because I follow a lot of Chicago Bears, sources are saying that ex-Bears Steve McMichael, Mongo, Julius Peppers, and the man himself, Devin Hester, are going to the Hall of Fame. Let's go.
Oh, are they sending Devin Hester? Holy shit, finally.
Yes. I mean, look, we're not here to talk about this, but another time, I mean, I'll just talk about every one of my favorite Devin Hester moments, just the whole time. I mean, we could do a whole show on it. I mean, the excitement of that was back in the days of Chicago Bears where I didn't care what the offense did. I didn't want the offense on the football field. honestly,
Rex Grossman almost won a Super Bowl.
Like, unless Thomas Jones was running the ball, because I like Thomas Jones because he was like the most rocked up running back of all time. That guy had the biggest arms I've ever freaking seen for a running back, just absurdly jacked. I like Thomas Jones, but the rest of the time, like, I just go ahead and score already. I don't care. I get the defense on the field, and then like I would get pissed if the opposing offense like got past the 40 yard line, because that meant Devin Hester wasn't going to get a chance to return a punt. Like, everything revolved around Devin Hester potentially getting to return a punt. And like, when Devin Hester wasn't returning kicks, I'm like, what the hell, guys, come on. Devin Hester should be returning kicks. I just wanted that dude. He's just edge of your seat all the time. Like, don't go to the bathroom. Don't step out of the room. Don't look at your phone. Nothing.
Blink and you'll miss it.
The ball is in the air and he's back there waiting for it. Something's going to go down. It might be it might be bad. It might be like a muff. It might be he runs around in some circles and gets tackled. But the magic was undeniable. Sorry, I just had to get that out.
That's all good. It's all good. It's also fun because, like, we've gone back through this, but McGarvin and I we played a little game last summer where we looked at the potential Hall of Fame candidates. And like, his name was up there. Pepper's name is up there. Another one I think it's getting into tomorrow night is Antonio Gates as well. Devin Hester, because my favorite story with him is always Tony Dungy saying, hey, you know what? We're not going to kick the Devin Hester. Changes his mind. First play of the Super Bowl 41. Yeah, we're going to kick the Devin Hester. And got played a great game of fuck around and find out. And he found out the hard way that, hey, don't kick the ball to Devin Hester.
We don't need to talk about anything that happened after that. The game ended right there after that opening kickoff, as far as I'm concerned. But you know, I mean, that's exactly it. The greats just They punish you when you make mistakes. And that was a mistake. Never. And I, only one other time did somebody publicly just be like, I'm not worried about Devin Hester. I don't care about you. And the Todd Sauerbrunn of the Denver Broncos in 2007, the very next season, was just like, I'm not scared of him. I'm kicking it to him. Kicked it, you know, punted it to him. At one point, he kind of had a couple of adventures earlier in the game. Then he returns a punt for a touchdown. And then they kick it off to him later in the game, and he runs that back for a touchdown. Oh, and at one point, he even hurdled Sauerbrunn, juked him into the dust on one of them. And it's just like, but why? Why? Why would you do this? Why would you poke this bear?
That's just it. Why poke the bear? Why do any of that? Two things I want to bring up with teams you mentioned. One, you brought up the same Green Bay Packers who basically told their now soon-to-be 70-year-old CEO, hey, time to go. I just love how that happens, where it's like, you're 70 next year, you're done, you're gone, bye, so long. Like how they just basically told Mark Murphy, sayonara.
Yep.
And then with Washington, though, like everyone's excited about Adam Peters because, you know, it comes from there. And then all of a sudden, oh, his first option says no, and Ben Johnson. Then Mike McDonald goes, no, thanks, I'm good. So you're ending up with Dan Quinn and then Cliff Kingsbury, who just jumped all over the NFL. And I know Patrick said today he's got his back, but I still have the take of belief with Cliff that if it weren't for Patrick going and being Patrick in 2018, I don't know if Cliff gets that Arizona Cardinal job to begin with. I feel like a lot of people just saw, oh, so he probably was good at Texas Tech. And we quickly learned that Texas Tech wasn't that good of a team back in the mid-2010s. So that's just another point I want to make, just with everything, like, wait and believe. Just give it time. That's the thing. People got to give it time. I feel like everyone's so quick to react. Everyone has goldfish brain nowadays. And even the other hire I'm excited to see, because I don't know much about the guy, but is Alonzo Highsmith coming in as well to help with the front office. And even with the Ben McAdoo stuff, too, it's just a general, He's not coaching the team. He's just going to be there to kind of, like, help Gerard through the process. It's kind of like a tutor, for example. He's just going to help him. He's going to walk him through things. And even to the point where you're saying earlier with how everyone's giving all these terms with Patriots Twitter, I remember last time we were on McGarvin. So this is the thing that we say throughout the season. Both of you have given me great podcast titles throughout the time. Kyrie's being Geno Smith, whatever Geno Smith, and McGarvin's with, hey, let's order a pizza. And I'm going back to that because it's like if you're with your friends and you order a pizza and you say, hey, I'm going to get pepperoni, mushroom, black olives, and they say yes. And by the time the pizza arrives, guess what they say? That's not what I wanted on my pizza. That's what Patriots Twitter is doing right now. Give it time. Take a slice of the damn pizza. You may like it. You may not.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned Alonzo Highsmith because I just came across a tweet. New Patriots senior personnel executive Alonzo Highsmith watched his Miami Hurricanes against Drake May twice during his tenure. May finished 36 of 61, 59% completion percentage, 582 yards, 6 touchdowns, 2 interceptions in 2 wins. And includes a highlight of him dropping a dime down the field for Tez Walker for a touchdown. And, I mean, that might be as good a segue as we can have into what the hell are the New England Patriots going to do with the number 3 overall pick?
My opinion. So I also want to ask you about the Bears situation as well, because I want to get into that.
It's all connected, I would say.
It is. My number one choice is still Jaden Daniels, just because I feel like Washington's going to take the UNC quarterback for the second time in 2 years. But there's also a parallel universe, and I have a take with the Bears, that the Bears, look, Washington leapfrogs Chicago to get Caleb Williams. Do you remember 2017, how John Lynch finessed Ryan Pace into, hey, move up one spot, but give us another 4 picks on top of giving us going from 3 to 2. I could see Ryan Poles doing the exact same thing to Adam Smith, because then again, where did Ryan Poles come from? Kansas City. So he knows a thing about two or doing something like that. So I can see them moving back a couple spots. And maybe if Chicago doesn't want Drake May or if Caleb Williams, for some reason, Washington gives a swell package, Chicago then can go a nice little room of Justin Fields, DJ Moore, Marvin Harrison Jr. Caleb Williams goes number one, leaving then either Drake May or Jaden Daniels to the Patriots. That's my little fantasy that I have up in my head. Please come true, even though I doubt it will.
I would.
And then the Patriots trade back and it pisses off the entire fan base. And they take.
Oh, yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I think what's nice about the Patriots is I was checking on their draft status at the moment. They've got a healthy amount of picks.
Yeah.
So as long as they don't give away. So, OK, let's get into the scenarios. Number one, let's start with the Bears because they're at the top of the draft. The way it stands right now, it certainly seems like they're going to take Caleb Williams.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, that's the smart, prudent thing to do. I happen to be a fan of Justin Fields. I think that he can still very much yet get better. I think that to an extent, this process isn't wholly fair to him. Again, having
he's getting friend-zoned essentially by the Bears.
Yeah, and like being a, you know, in a gut renovation situation in year two and kind of outplaying the possibility that he could have gotten traded last year. And people will say the Bears passed on CJ Stroud and they should have just taken him. It's like, I don't really see it that way. I think of it as the Bears looked at it as they had their guy and we're going to try to build with him. And CJ Stroud went to a very solid situation, maybe not the best talent in the world, but some very good coaching that was able to maximize what he did. And then I think that the Texans in general were also just underrated. I mean, that was a good team. And I think CJ Stroud, people did mess up with CJ Stroud, but I don't know that I'm looking at it as like, oh yeah, the Bears screwed that up. It's like they got a heck of a haul and they ended up with the number one overall pick again, with a chance to either get an even better quarterback prospect in Caleb Williams than what CJ Stroud was in theory, or you could finesse more picks and continue to build. I think there are logical avenues for both things. I know a lot of your Bears fans that I'm friends with would just vehemently be like, no, take Caleb Williams and don't think twice about it, or take Drake May. Don't think twice about it. Justin Fields hasn't been good enough. And I think, like, you know what? I can see that. I think that there's, you know, if you're looking at it in a purely heartless way, I think that that's how I would think about it. That said, I do happen to think that as the year went on, Justin Fields showed signs that he can yet get better. There are more levels to his game. And he also can just do shit that, like, maybe one other quarterback in the league can do at times. So I think there's still more there. So, okay. Say the Bears keep the pick. They take Caleb Williams. Then I think you're looking at Drake May going number two overall. And then you're getting Jaden Daniels at number three. There's always that chance that Marvin Harrison Jr. could sneak his way in there, but I just don't see it. Washington doesn't, they've got receivers. They've got players on offense. Maybe they could definitely use a Marvin Harrison Jr., but they don't have a quarterback. Right. You've got your opportunity to get Drake May. Just take him. Just take him and get on with it.
Yeah.
Unless you're going to get a veteran that you know that you believe in. But again, why would you do that? You have the number two overall pick. Just do it. The only reason that the Bears thing is even a question is because you have a clear starting level quarterback on your team and a guy who is young and has upside still, in my opinion. I just don't follow anybody who says, oh, we know what Justin Fields is now. That just, you've made up your mind. I don't think you need to do that. But that's the only reason that's a decision. With Washington and the Patriots, come on. There's no call to be made. You have no quarterback, right? You don't, your starting quarterback is not on the roster, in my opinion, in either one of those cases. So to me, I'm taking Jaden Daniels. You know, there's also that possibility that, again, if Caleb Williams gets picked number one overall, Justin Fields gets made available. And then do you want to do that? Would you trade the second round pick that the Patriots have? That would be a little bit of a fleecing, honestly, to get, you're giving away number 36 overall. That's a premium second round pick. And you're taking Justin Fields. But then you could say, okay, we got a quarterback. Now let's take Marvin Harrison Jr. And then, I don't know, that's an interesting thing that you could do. Of course, you could also just say, you know what, let's take a quarterback or not, or let's go ahead and just get a veteran, see if we can get more out of Mac Jones and take Marvin Harrison Jr. Or a left tackle or whatever you want to do. So there are a number of different ways to do it. There is, however, a non-zero chance, and this is something that I'm going to discuss a little bit in the coming days. Being down at the Shrine Bowl, meeting a couple of people that are involved with the Bears and talked to a bunch of players. Caleb Williams' talent is just is undeniable. You know, you could talk about him struggling in the second half of the year. I mean, like, he still made some really damn good plays. And you also just saw that USC didn't quite have the guns to match up with some of these other teams. And Caleb Williams was the only reason that they won as many games as they did.
The defense featured.
Yeah. And so I don't have that many questions about him as a player, except for, yeah, like for whatever reasons that they are, he holds onto the ball a ludicrously long time as well, even though he doesn't necessarily, like, he scrambles to throw more than, say, Justin Fields does at this point. And a lot of people will say, well, you know, Caleb Williams, you know, he can see the field just fine. He just prefers to play hero ball, whereas Justin Fields can't see the field, which I think if you watch the film, that's not really true at all. But for whatever reasons there are, Caleb Williams holds onto the ball and he fumbles a lot. So he has a lot of similar issues, but people want to kind of be like, oh yeah, well, it's not the same. It's like, it might not be exactly the same, but the results are the same. And they're going to be the same in the NFL as a first year player, going to get sacked and he's going to fumble, you know, that those things are going to happen. I think there is a chance that Caleb Williams gets in an interview room with the Bears and doesn't blow them away. And or some of the background stuff they turn up on him doesn't quite vibe with the stuff that they are valuing in the locker room that they're trying to build. Whereas Justin Fields, I think, like, epitomizes that situation, what they want to build and the kind of mentality and the kind of locker room they're trying to build. I think that stuff matters to them. I'm not saying that Caleb Williams is a bad guy, but based on the things I've heard, I mean, his teammates don't entirely be messing with him like that. Like from what I can from what
they
I can
go to his birthday party.
Glean. All right.
I'm sorry. We talk draft. I have to bring up draft.
I know. But you know, I think there's a chance, and again, I don't even know that it's that deep or that it would be that level, but I just feel I wonder if there's a non-zero chance that maybe they're like, look, this guy's really talented, but does he fit into what we're building here? You know, people keep talking about him like he's the next Patrick Mahomes, but I keep on telling everybody there's just one of those guys. And there's a reason there's only one of him. Yep. Okay, it's not about what he does with his arm or his legs or anything that happens on the football field.
Or if he puts ketchup on a steak.
It's about all this, you know, and all the stuff that you don't see. Yep. And I'm just not 100% sure that he's wired like that, meaning Caleb Williams. So there is a chance that maybe Chicago does say, hey, Washington, come get your boy, and steals a first round pick off them for next year, right? Because I think people keep talking about multiple first round picks. I could be wrong about this, but when people say multiple first round picks, very often they're also including the pick swap piece that you made in the year of. Mm-hmm. So we're talking about, oh yeah, two first round picks. It means number two overall this year and the number one that they get in 2025. I don't think they mean, oh, to trade up one spot, you got to give me the first in 2025 and 2026. I feel like that isn't usually how that works. Mm-mm. So no. if you steal a first rounder off the next year, like, hey, Caleb Williams is your first rounder for next year. And you do it that way. I think, personally, the Chicago Bears aren't taking Drake May if they move down to number two. If you're passing
Maserati Marv,
yes. So to me, I'm thinking to myself, if you're the Chicago Bears and you're passing on Caleb Williams, what the hell I want Drake May for? Like, I know there are other people that really want, you know, or think Drake May is going to be a better pro, you know, prospect because he looks the part more and kind of has that prototypical body. No, to me, Caleb Williams is as talented as he is, and you think he's the best player, you know, or the better quarterback, take him. You're not taking the lesser quarterback prospect because of vibes. Hell no, right? Not to me. But I think there's a chance that people think about this. What if Marvin Harrison Jr. goes to the combine and actually participates? And at 6'3", 6'4", 200-something pounds, goes and runs a 4.3 and jumps out the gym and looks smooth as silk on his route running and just looks like, oh my God, this guy is a freaking mutant. And then also goes into the interview process the way I think he's going to go into the interview process. I think there's a chance he might end up as the top player on the Bears board. There's a possibility that that happens. Like people, yes, quarterback, more important position. Absolutely. Right? It's the foundation of the franchise.
Yep.
But we've been talking about Marvin Harrison Jr. for the last two, three years or whatever as being that dude. Right? Some of the plays that this dude is making, like we've been talking about him as one of the best players in college football for the last 2 years, too. It's not like he's like this is new. There's a chance that he's the best, that he ends up being the top player on Chicago's board. I think there's a chance. And if that's true, we saw them last year have a chance to take Jalen Carter. And again, the issues were way more extreme.
Yes.
But they were like, Philly, you go ahead and take Jalen Carter. That's cool with us. We'll take Darnell Wright because we like him better. I think that stuff matters to them. So in the case that that happens, that Chicago's like, okay, go ahead, take Caleb Williams, Washington. We'll go down. We're taking Marvin Harrison Jr. Drake May's right there for the New England Patriots. And I would do that.
My only question with that is, though, say if they either go, if the May Daniels hypothetical does come to play, and I, myself and I assume Garvin, him and I are just freaking out on Twitter. My big question with all that is then, what does the Arizona Cardinals do at four? Because I feel like if Marv falls to four, he's going to Arizona. But if he doesn't fall to four, it causes that weird loophole then of do the Cardinals go line? Does Romo Dunze or Malik Nabers jump up to four? Because if all this stuff comes to fruition and for some reason Marvin Harrison goes within the top two, one of those quarterbacks I think is going to slowly start to have that Bo Callahan-esque fault. And now we're asking the question, hey, did another quarterback not have anyone go to his birthday? So it causes a ripple effect that just opens up endless possibilities.
I legitimately don't think that that's going to happen. The way I see it is, I don't know who the teams will be, but I think the top of the draft, I think the top four is going to be quarterback, 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 wide receiver. I think that's just kind of how it's going to shake out. I don't know that the Bears will take Caleb Williams. I think that's kind of the question mark there. I think even if they don't, they'll probably trade down because I think you have a realistic chance at, you know, at maneuvering the board to your liking.
The thing with that is with the Bears, they've got a second first round pick. They
exactly.
Offer not number in nine. The top 10.
Yeah. So it's like, you know, they have the wiggle room to do it. I just think with the way we've seen the draft play out since really like 2019, 18, quarterbacks are going to go at the top. They're always going to go at the top. Teams are going to pay the premium. Even when we're like, oh, there's no way a team is going to pay that premium. We saw, you know, San Francisco in 21 traded up. You know what I mean? Traded up nine spots. They gave up two additional first-round picks on top of the pick swap to go up and get Trey Lance. Now, was that a good move in hindsight? No. Was it a good move at the time? Personally, I actually don't think so. I think it was one of those moves that where everyone's like, oh, I have to go get my quarterback. I have to go get my quarterback. So I think if Chicago's sitting there at one and they're like, Caleb Williams, not enough people at his birthday party. We're probably going to pass on him. Another team's going to be like, hey, fuck the birthday party. I'm coming up. Yeah. Hold that card for me. I'm on my way. You know what I mean? It's going
to
happen.
And that, like you said, right, to maneuver the board the way that you want. The reason I posed that situation the way that I did is because I think that the Bears do have an opportunity and value a chance to get their top player on the board. And I think that there is a very good chance that Marvin Harrison Jr. is going to be one of the top players on their board. I see it. I can see it now. I see the vision. But to that point, right? So maybe Darnell Wright wasn't the top player on their board. I had to go back and look and see what people said, but he's going to be one of the top guys, right?
Yeah.
And so that worked out last year where it's like, okay, we got a crazy haul and we also got a guy that we really, really like. And the Bears could absolutely have that situation if they wanted to trade down. They could do it to two. They could go further if they wanted. Hey, Atlanta, you interested in a quarterback? Come give us a freaking bounty, and we'll slide down to eight, and then we got all kind of stuff that we can do, all kind of ways that we could play around with this. We could do whoever's left of like Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze. Brock Bowers, you still there? We could do that. edge rusher that we like, we could do that too. And so I think there are a lot of different avenues. But then again, of course, you're also looking at it from a Chicago Bears perspective that since you have number one and number nine, you don't have to trade back from number one. You could take Caleb Williams. You can just grab the guy that you want, and then you could trade down from nine. So they've got plenty of options. To your point, though, about the quarterbacks, the chances are, I think that's how it's going to go down as quarterbacks 1, 2, 3. I do think that Marvin Harrison Jr. is that kind of player where it's like Calvin Johnson, I think, was the last receiver to go that high when he went number two overall when he was coming out. I think Marvin Harrison Jr. is that level of prospect. And I feel like sometimes people just be wanting to take quarterbacks just to take them.
Yeah.
And they will. Oh, and they will. They do it all the time.
And I just think that, you know, if the Bears ended up at number two, they could probably get something big from somebody. But again, at that point, you're just like, I don't need to help you. I already traded down. I already got a first rounder for next year. I'm going to get this dude that I really like right now. And in that case, I do feel like unless Drake May, like people just get like, dude, this guy's an asshole or something like that. Like in the interview rooms, I think Jaden Daniels will probably interview pretty well. But he might be the guy that slips a little because of that, like, you know, it's great. He's like a dual threat guy, but he's kind of small and he doesn't throw the ball with the kind of arm talent and stuff that these other top two guys do. And, you know, potential and upside. That said, even if Jaden Daniels did slip down just a little bit, I don't think he gets past number six Tennessee. With the New York Giants.
Oh, Giants. Yeah.
I think that's the farthest he goes down because I think Arizona is probably pretty much thinking they're going to stick with Kyler Murray, which makes
financially
makes perfect sense to me. And then, yeah. Okay. Even if Marvin Harrison Jr. is gone, Malik Nabers, baby, let's go. Like that's easy. Or you could take a tackle, whichever one you want to do. You could take your pick, but the Giants, I think it's not maybe the most ideal thing in terms of playing Jaden Daniels right now. But if you're like, okay, Daniel Jones, you go ahead and play out this year and then we're trading your ass or cutting you after next year and Jaden Daniels is going to be our guy, that could be low-key ideal for them.
Oh, good Lord, yes.
Couldn't it?
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. I think there's just so many ways the draft can go. Oh, yeah. But I think, again, just history tells us, it's going to be quarterbacks early, and then they're going to figure out, you know, it's going to the way it shakes out the rest of the way is how it's going to shake out. Personally, I think if, you know, Drake May is sitting there at three, you take him. If Jaden Daniels is sitting there at three, you take him. I also think, and I've been kind of pushing this narrative. So far, I'm the only one who's caught on to it, but pushing the narrative online that by the time we get out of the combine, by the time the combine is done and we start really get into draft season, I think we're really going to see the pushback on the whole Drake May solidified QB2. No matter what, he's going second. He's the second QB. That's gonna flip.
You're absolutely going to have guys that are going to be like, man, I like Jaden Daniels more.
Exactly.
I literally just like him more. I like his dual threat capability. That's the thing, man. Every single year, there are going to be people who are going to be like, I don't know. I like this random ass dude as my top quarterback. Like last year, I'm sure there were people who was like, I like Will Levis more than I like Bryce Young or CJ Stroud.
They were there. I interacted with a few of them. I was like, y'all are tripping, but I hear you.
Totally.
The other thing too with Washington, if they were to trade up as well, I feel like their fan base has this like free sense of like carelessness right now to where it's, hey, we have new ownership. Do what you want to where if next year they don't, if they have a bad year this year and they don't have their first round pick, it's one of those like, you know, is what it is situations. But then also too, this is one of those drafts. This draft starts at one. The chaos is going to start immediately. It's just one of those moments though where you wait for if someone falls, that's when the phones really start ringing and we get the true draft day movie moments where look, one of these young GMs is a chance to get fleeced. That's why I like a hire like the Elliott Wolf because you know, if someone, and also too, that whole that Jeff, I touched base with it when I had Sophie on a couple days ago, but the Jeff Howe article that came out about they're going to draft a tackle. I know it set Patriots Twitter ablaze, but that's got to be a smokescreen, right? Oh, like,
if,
I Yeah.
It's too early for it not to be a smokescreen. We haven't even gone through the combine. I don't believe anyone knows. I honestly think any team right now knows for certain who they're taking in April. They think it's way too early. No. There's a lot of the process.
Not even unquote, process I can almost left. Tell you, not even the Bears know for yep. certain what yep. they are about to do.
I'm sure everyone has an idea. They're like, oh, here's sure. who we'd like. We like these few guys or whatever. The combine will kind of sort all that out. Pro days will sort all of that out. Interviews, the top 30 visits, top 20 visits, however many it is, all of those will play a part in it. I think right now to say, hey, the Patriots are going to take a tackle, we don't know that. There's no way they know that. No one knows that. It's kind of a little too early for that. And I like Jeff Howe. It's just, it's a little too early to kind of put that out there as like a thing.
Yeah. I wanted to just troll back through some old draft stuff. The last time, I mean, really the only time in the last few years that quarterbacks truly went 1-2-3 was literally just 2021. Every other year, there's been some player busting in and kind of like breaking up sort of the monotony, like randomly, right? Even in like the 2018 year, where that was like a really like ballyhooed class, you know what I mean? That was still Baker Mayfield. Saquon jumped up in there at number 2 overall, and then Sam Darnold went number 3, and then you didn't have Josh Allen again until number 7, which, I mean,
Buffalo traded up for, remember, like, Tampa.
Like y'all have been saying, though, anything can happen. I feel like this to me could definitely be a draft where it's 1-2-3. But I got to be honest, I don't know that it's going to happen.
That's, I feel like someone.
Not for certain. I don't know for certain that it's going to happen.
I feel like the more I think about it, it's going to happen. The quarterback, unless some crazy trade happens to where Chicago gets blown away, where they get, hey, well, Washington gives them 2, they're 2025 first, and then like say, I don't know, like a second either next year or in 2026, something like that. Like, we don't know too much about the 2025 class at the moment. Like, there's no real star that's going to come out. One example, too, I want to give about the court, how, you know, people get, let's call it as it is, horny for quarterbacks. Do you guys remember the 2011? Do you remember the 2011 draft class?
Was that the year with Blaine Gabbert and
it was Cam, right?
It was Cam number 1 and Von Miller number 2, but you had Jake Locker, you had Blaine Gabbert.
I like Jake Locker. I thought he was a baller.
And you had Christian Ponder. Healthy,
but I thought he was a baller. I was like, that guy's going to be somebody.
I remember thinking Jake Locker was going to be good too.
Yeah, and then he got hurt a bunch and was like, oh, well, never mind.
Yeah, but it's like that's the sense where I was getting at, where like the word I just used with quarterback horny, because people, like, that also had to do with the fact the strike was happening and all these teams were just like, hey, we got to go and get our quarterbacks, where you get teams frantically panicking for it. This year's different because you have all the talent in the world. My main thing with the quarterbacks I want to focus on, though, is those like mid-round guys. You know, Michael Penix Jr., to where I still have the take that everyone says of, oh, the national championship game hurt his stock. Yeah, okay, he didn't have the best game. But if you go look at his Sugar Bowl highlights, the guy balled. He balled out in the Sugar Bowl. He was great in the Pac-12 championship. And even still, J.J. McCarthy, I don't know what to think. And then there's Bo Nix, who I firmly believe is going to be a Sam Darnold or a Mitch Trubisky, where it's
It's written all over him.
I think Bo Nix sucks. And I think that, like, my guys down at the Senior Bowl that were there and watched him, like, and just generally about that quarterback class, were just like, yeah, these dudes were ass. Like, it was not good. I feel like just watching some of Bo Nix throwing one-on-ones and the ball's landing like 5 yards short, and you're just like, you're not even giving guys a chance. Like, you get like, yeah, that's great. Your completion percentage was good because your ass was just throwing screens. You know what? Go play with the LA Raiders. Luke Getsy loves screens. Like, it's like he'll get you right.
He'll get you right. It's crazy.
I think Michael Penix Jr. is going to be one of those guys that gets picked like in the
throwing at the combine round. By the way, he said today.
What's that?
Penix. Sorry to cut you off, Kyrie, but Michael Penix did say today that he is going to be throwing at the combine.
I think he needs to.
I like it. Yeah, I like that from him. So I feel like he's going to be a guy that goes in like the second and he gets stashed. Maybe like this year's Hendon Hooker.
Or something. That's the name that kept coming to mind for me. Yeah, I I agree. I think Bo Nix falls out of the first as well. Although people are really big on him. They're like, oh yeah, trade back in for Bo Nix. I'm like, for why?
I mean, I keep on hearing that people like NFL teams are going to be higher on Bo Nix than
everyone else. Yeah, and they're going to be wrong. Like
who, NFL football saying that?
Yeah, it's like, you go ahead and you pick Kenny Pickett 2.0 in the first round. You see works out.
Exactly yeah. Right. As far as mid-round quarterbacks that I kind of like, I like Spencer Rattler a little bit. The personality kind of rubs me the wrong way, but I don't know him personally, obviously. But just his on-field personality kind of irks me in a weird way. I think J.J. McCarthy is interesting because I like him for next year, right? I would have loved if he went back and just played another year. I think he's a little raw. I think you see all of the talent. It's there. I just think some team is going to draft him and play him this year, and it's going to look terrible.
He's a miniature Taysom Hill. He's pocket Taysom Hill.
I think he's going to be better than that. I really do. I think his arm talent is so nice.
It's legit. But he's not ready, though.
He has... I want to say, like, there's a threshold where it's like, above 750 pass attempts, you're generally looked at like, okay, this is a guy who's relatively safe to draft, and he's at 713. So it's like it's not to say that he can't be drafted. I just the kind of offense that he played in was so run heavy. And again, I joked the other day and people got mad at me and were throwing stats at me. I joked the other day that like, ha ha ha, like look at, you know, JJ McCarthy's third down percentage. Like it's so good because he only throws on third and two. It's just because you watch some of the Michigan games, right? And it's run, and Blake Corum's pounding you for 4 yards a pop. And then it's third and two, and JJ's throwing like, okay, cool, got you, no problem. I mean, yeah, I also saw him convert third and sevens and third and eights and things like that. It's he can throw the football.
Yep.
The experience scares the crap out of me,
especially when he's under duress. That's a lot of quarterbacks, but holy shit, when he is under duress, it's like he goes from like a 5-star player to like 2.5, and you're like, dude, what is happening? What did you think? When you saw that and you were like, fuck it, and it's just like he'll wildly overthrow guys or on the very next play he'll underthrow them, and you're like, dude, I just need you to kind of hit the middle here, and I know you're under pressure, I just kind of need you to have it together. Now obviously he played in behind that Michigan line, so like he wasn't pressured all that often, but it was just there were just things you saw and you're like, don't like that. And I think that's something that can kind of get buffed out with experience. He's only like 21 years old. I still think there's room to grow there. I think he's one of those players though that'll get talked about all of next month as a ceiling. His ceiling's so high. And like I mentioned, the year of Trey Lance, like, yeah, ceiling, great. Where's the floor though? Yeah, if the ceiling is the penthouse and the floor is the cellar, what are we doing? Like, and you kind of need someone.
Found out what he was closer to, which again, maybe wasn't his fault entirely. I mean, obviously they didn't intend to play him at all. I mean, he played sparingly in his rookie year and it was fine, but clearly he was not ready to rock that first year. And then he gets hurt. And then Kyle Shanahan's like, bruh, I got Brock Purdy now. I'm done with you. You know, and now he's damaged goods, and who knows when he's going to get a starting job if he gets a consistent starting job again. I mean, that's how it is in the NFL, man. But I think I'm with you. By no means should JJ McCarthy start games this year.
God, no.
No means. He should.
It better be an emergency. It would be one hell of an emergency.
The other guy, too, that I'm kind of skittish on just because what he can do, it's kind of – this is a weird college – it's a college comparison. He basically is like a Jalen Milroe, you know, where at first he – athletic as hell, but he's a tree because when he throws, he's going to throw like this way out of bounds. That's Joe Milton. I know he didn't have the best senior role as well. But you know what I mean, though? Like Joe Milton can chuck the hell out of a football, but his football IQ is just not there. It's to where he's a guy that's going to get, you know, stashed round three, round four to where it's the same thing. Hey – maybe unless it's a really bad team situation or there's just injuries galore, then he can start. But besides that, it's another thing where he needs time to develop. A lot of these quarterbacks are in that realm for when it comes to this draft that are more the mid-round guys. That's where everything's exciting. Because I always have a saying, too, with the draft. Day one, if you hit on day one, it's great. You win the draft by killing day two and day three. And one more point I want to make, because you know how Belichick always got criticized for his drafting? Because I was thinking about this today. Besides drafting a degenerate gambler wide receiver in the sixth round and a questionable kicker in the fourth round, Bill Belichick did pretty good with the 2023 draft class, if you're looking at it.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought he did all right with the 22 class as well, and we saw how that turned out. Pierre Strong ended up getting shipped out. Kevin Harris is a practice squad player, and everyone else can't really play. Cole Strange, though, he gets a lot of shit. I think he can play.
Yeah, I think he can play. There were a lot of other problems with that. Like, that draft class maybe, in theory, wouldn't have been as bad as it was. The problem was that they drafted players based on a philosophy and an offensive system they were going to try to implement. And then they threw it out the window.
By week four, they were just like, yeah, we're just not doing it anymore.
It's
like,
by week four, man, by training camp, end of training camp, they realized they couldn't run an outside zone to save their lives. And we're just like, yep, we're going back to the old shit now. Like, it was honestly like, I know you were there, McGarvin, because I saw some of your videos, but like, you remember watching them and they just couldn't run a play.
Holy shit. It was so frustrating because there were players that were blowing up the run plays. And I'm like, this is a guy who will not make the roster. I remember Jeremiah Farms, a player I really like. I'm watching Jeremiah Farms destroy the starting offensive line.
Because if you've been out of
training camp, you know, it's ones versus twos usually in team settings. I'm watching Jeremiah Farms, number 70, is out there blowing up the starting offensive line and tackling dudes in the backfield. And I'm like, holy shit. What are we doing?
They didn't know who to block, and it wasn't like Jeremiah Farms, like, oh my god, he's overwhelming.
He was just running through an open gap
because they didn't know who to block, and then they were gonna try to do like the whole Shanny, like, you know, McVay, oh yeah, some boot play action off of this, and then like they didn't know who to block on that because they didn't know who to block on the run versions, and so Mac Jones would be trying to boot out, and he'd turn, and like Matt Judon had sacked him already.
Yep.
And then receivers were running into each other on the route patterns. And it's just like, it was so disgusting. Yep. And so they didn't, as a result, they didn't know who they wanted to be and what they wanted to do. And so it's funny because like they had a plan for Tyquan Thornton's like second game back. And it was like, oh, look at this. He scored two touchdowns. Nice. And then they were just like, well, that was it. That's all we had.
That's all we had.
Jack Jones had the pick against Green Bay, and then the beautiful like tiptoe pick against Detroit as well. And then after that, you didn't really hear much from him either.
Yeah, Jack Jones, though, that whole thing was really interesting because I remember being on the wrong side of that argument his rookie year, where everyone's like, oh, this guy's a stud. And I was like, he's fine. And everyone's like, no, he's so good. And I'm like, no, he's fine. And I think that Buffalo game, the second Buffalo game at home, I think it was a Thursday night game, he got torched a bunch, but none of the passes were completed. And so everyone's like, oh, that was a fine game. And then he got hurt a week later. And I was like, no, he got killed out there. And it was just like,
he was getting smoked.
It was disgusting. And everyone's like, oh, he played so well. And I'm like, he did not. He wasn't
even watching. Picture.
He was holy shit. It was so crazy. It was the passes were incomplete. So it's like, oh, he didn't give up any yard. And I'm like, yeah, but he didn't play well.
The fans were literally doing it for them. Like, you know how the DBs will be like, yeah, got you. No, yeah,
exactly. Zone. Exactly.
But it's like, oh, the dude, my goodness. 10 yards behind him, but the pass is out of bounds.
It was the quarterback maddening.
Just smoked it. And he's like, yeah, gotcha. And the fans are all like, look at that. Jack Jones didn't give up no catches. It's like, not for lack of try.
There's another game of 2022 I always look at where I'm like, if it wasn't for one wrong move, the game goes the other way, because the week later after the Buffalo game, remember, they go to the desert. What happened early on? Kyler Murray was torching them.
Yeah.
And what happened? He took one. He was cooking Matthew Judon in those first few run plays, I remember. And then he took a wrong step right away. I was like, shit, there goes his ACL. And then Colt McCoy came in and the Patriots snuck out a win in Monday night.
And that game was in doubt for way longer than it had any right to be.
Yeah,
I was looking. I'm like, oh, this team is so sorry because like these dudes just ain't, and it's just not happening. Like, we should be able to put them away, and it's just like screen, screen, screen. And then you have Mac Jones yelling on the sideline, and everyone's like, oh, what is he yelling? And I'm like, I don't know. Mac Jones gets a lot of shit, but that game, he was absolutely right. They threw like 14 screens. This shit was absurd.
It was a terrible game plan. And then the next week was the one where they go to play the Raiders, and it was just completely disgustingly bad. Yep. you know.
He played his worst game of his career that day too. Ugh.
Yeah, and that was one of those where I was like, oh damn, Mac Jones might actually be bad. That sucks. And then of course, you know, the other thing happened in that game we don't need to talk about. But yeah, I think in talking about you know, to kind of get back to what we were talking about with you know, quarterbacks and kind of these mid-round guys, right? I think it makes sense. It would make sense for the Patriots to look into some of these later dudes just to keep double dipping.
Take two of them. You get me. That's the plan. You take two of them. Because right now, not only do they not have a starting quarterback, I don't think they have a backup quarterback. Fuck it, take two.
I mean, I think you could say Bailey Zappe, you know,
he's the practice squad.
Absolutely not.
Well, here's the thing, right? Bailey Zappe, the thing I appreciate about Bailey Zappe that even from the beginning in training,
that he torches the FC North.
He's going to throw the ball with conviction.
he throws the most confident interceptions in the world. Holy shit.
He will throw the most confident, just like, I absolutely believe in this interception type of interceptions. But he's going to throw that shit. He's not going to be afraid of it. He's not going to think twice about it. Mac Jones would be over there afraid. Mac Jones would be so afraid of screwing up. Like that Giants play in particular, that last one, the last one.
The Isaiah Simmons one?
He had a dude wide open, and he was so scared of screwing it up that he just threw an interception. Right. And you can't play anymore. I'm sorry. You're not allowed. But when Bailey's happy to be throwing interceptions, he's just like, remember the fake spike interception?
He believed.
Holy shit.
He believed in that shit with every fiber of his being. He threw that shit in a triple coverage.
He threw it with such conviction that the camera panned quickly, like, oh shit, someone's wide open down there, and it was in a team meeting. It was like, what the fuck was that?
He got Rich Eisen hyped on the broadcast, like, oh man, he did the fake snap. Oh my god, he's going long and it's intercepted. He threw it in a triple coverage. Oh my god. That was one of those plays where you know how something happens that's so funny that you can't even be in the room. You got to run out of the room. Like, I started cackling and like rolling on the floor. Yeah, and I'm just like, and I'm just silently just screaming. And my wife is like, what the hell's wrong with you? And I'm just like, it was so bad. But no, I think it's possible to keep Bailey Zappe or convince yourself to do that. But I'm still with you though. I'm cool with churning and burning the whole thing.
Yep.
I'm the same way too. You know what? It doesn't hurt. But even with Bailey Zappe too, like if he's a QB3, he's fine. Like I said, for some reason he likes to come in and torch the NFC North, the AFC North. He did it at Cleveland last year. He did it at Pittsburgh this past season. So we'll see what happens. But even still with him, like the Buffalo game this year, the Patriots could have won that game if it weren't for him being stupid and just being like, oh, I'm going to throw it. And then it's picked. There's something else I was going to – oh, the other thing I was going to talk about, that Arizona game, that was the Raekwon McMillan fumble six, because remember DeAndre Hopkins had bad ball security?
Yeah.
Yep. But, gentlemen, we have a football game to talk about, actually.
Holy shit.
You know what? We got a football game to talk about. Super Bowl 58, Kansas City Chiefs, San Francisco 49ers. Before we get into who we think's taking it all, one question I have for you guys. In order to win this game, who needs to step up? Who's that one player when you look at them on either side of the ball, either team, you're going to say, show me something? Like, who is that player that comes to mind?
Ambry Thomas, cornerback for the San Francisco 49ers. Niners fan think he's pretty good. I think he's pretty mid. And they're like, no, he's just playing out of position. He's been playing out of position for like 2 years now. Like, at this point, show me something.
I don't know. Quarterback for the Kansas City Chiefs. I don't know. He might need to step up in this game. I don't know. Is he any good, do you think? Chiefs quarterback? 1-5?
Yeah, I've been told that guy kind of knows what to, you know, how to do it. So, we'll see.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, depending on what that guy does, I don't know so much, but On that other team, or like on that team, another guy is I think Trent McDuffie is really interesting to me. I viewed him as a guy who was going to be a good corner, but maybe not necessarily a top flight one. But I think he's really damn good at what he does.
And I think that's new, though. Last year he was not, and obviously he was a rookie. He was still developing, but people were like, "Oh yeah, see, he's obviously so great." And I'm like, "Yeah, but last year y'all were dunking on him the entire playoffs because he was getting torched left and right. He really stepped it up. He's played fantastic ball this year."
Yeah, and so I view it as that guy is going to be, he's going to be covering, you know, Brandon Ayuk and Deebo Samuel. He's going to be tasked with dealing with these guys. And I think especially dealing with routes over the middle, I think that's where you really want to shut the San Francisco 49ers down. Take away the middle of the field as much as possible, contest those balls, get them up in the air, and maybe get, you know, your safeties to come down with them. I think you could also throw Legarius Sneed in that category. I think that the big key is just going to be force Brock Purdy to hold on to the football, okay, as much as possible. Because Brock Purdy outplayed some allegations, a couple of weeks ago. I think, you know, they came from behind and they won a game. That matters.
Yeah,
you got to kind of see it go in.
Much to my chagrin. Yep.
Yeah, and so I think that this is going to be different though. Steve Spagnuolo is going to be throwing so much stuff at him. Yep. It's going to be a matter of how can he process it all? I think that he's going to be holding the ball potentially a little bit more than he does and maybe a little bit more confused. But look, Kyle Shanahan is as good as anybody at just scheming guys open. But I think if the Chiefs are going to win on the defensive side of the football, got to be a guy like Trent McDuffie making a play.
There's one player from that draft class last year as well that I liked coming out, and I feel like he's really coming in on this year, and that's George Karloftis on the Chiefs' defensive line as well.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a good player.
I was talking some shit about wanting him on the Patriots. Honestly, when they traded down and they were at 29, I was like, I think it might be this. He might be the one. And then he goes like the next pick.
Yep. It was Cole Strange. Yeah, another player I think is going to have a big game is number 32, Nick Bolton for the Chiefs. Very good linebacker. He's a player I wanted real bad, and we didn't get him, obviously. The key to stopping that offense is going to be stopping Christian McCaffrey. And I know it's a cliche. Everyone knows that. Easier said than done and all that. But honestly, make it a Brock Purdy game because I just don't believe in that guy. So, like, I think you're going to need your linebackers to step it up. I think Drew Tranquil is who he is at this point. Leo Chanel is still probably half a year away. You're going to need Nick Bolton to kind of be the guy, because if not, you're in trouble. Also, I know he's going to end up in some situations where he's going to be tasked with covering George Kittle. That's going to be a mismatch. So I think on the Niner side, you're going to want to, you know, find 32 in coverage against, you know, George Kittle. And that's not to say Nick Bolton is bad in coverage. I don't think he is.
George Kittle is
fucking Zeus, you know what I mean? Like that guy's built like a Roman god. He's gonna make it happen. So, you know, you're gonna try to avoid that matchup if you can, if you're Kansas City. But the way that Spagnuolo runs his defense, you're gonna have some guys in coverage that you don't really want in coverage against guys that you don't want them covering. You just need to survive those matchups. You're not gonna win them, right? You're not gonna be like, oh, Nick Bolton really shut down George Kittle. No, you're gonna be like, all right, well, you know, limit the damage, kind of contain it, make it happen that way.
My only big question with this game, too, and also when I said show me something, I should have said X factor and said, but when I say show me something, you know, it's like that player you want to see step up, like that player, that what I mean for there. The big thing I want to ask you guys is if San Francisco wins, what do you think would have had to have happened? Because obviously we're not going to go out there and say, oh, Patrick Mahomes had a 3-interception game, or oh, Patrick Mahomes did this or this, but like, what does San Francisco have to do defensively? Because we know at the end of the day, the Steve Wilkes defense has been very different from what we've seen with D'Amico Ryans and Robert Saleh in the last few years.
Does running the football count on the defensive side of the ball?
I ask a hard question. So what do I say?
Yeah, I'm with you on that.
Because I think that's it. I think the thing is you take Travis Kelce away. That is number one. That's number one.
But who do you put
on? Because he trusts Travis Kelce more than anybody. And Rashee Rice has come on and he's got my respect. That's a big situation to have a rookie be like, okay, be our best player now on offense aside from number 15 in the Super Bowl. That's tough. Now, of course, the other thing is stop the run, because Isaiah Pacheco and his running like I bite people ass, you know, gonna be out there, you know, jitterbugging all over the place. If you allow him to do that, then that's going to make the passing game more effective for Kansas City. If you force them to be one-dimensional and you force Patrick Mahomes to run around in circles like he did against Tampa Bay back in the day, then, you know, and he's not able to just find Travis Kelce open, I think that's it. Don't let him get comfortable. It's really as simple as that. Do not let him get comfortable. Don't let him just be like, just don't let him throw to his first read ever.
The other player, too, I feel like Nick Bosa is going to have to, like, really get to him. Obviously, we saw him with two sacks in that game. But the other question, McGarvin, I'm trying to remember, what broadcast played the Sonic Rings? Was it the AFC Championship or the NFC Championship?
It was the NFC Championship.
Oh, okay. Damn, it's not Fox.
That was hilarious. I agree with everything Kyrie just said. Those are the keys to the game. I think this is one of those games that's like a really easy on paper game plan. You're like, oh yeah, these are the players you have to stop. These are the plays you have to make, and boom, Super Bowl championship. It's just going to be about whether or not it happens. I think another low key. Really, it's actually just me wanting to throw a shot real quick. But I just need Andy Reid to not get too cute. And he does it in every game I've ever watched him coach ever, where he'll just have like a poorly timed trick play at like the edge of the red zone, and it'll just take him out of it. Just need him to kind of avoid that. We know Shanahan won't make that kind of mistake, partly because his quarterback really can't play all that well as an individual. So, you know, don't fuck it up if you're Andy Reid. Don't walk yourself into that mistake, and you know he will. It's kind of what he does. And like Kyrie said, with not letting Mahomes get, you know, not letting him run around back there. Don't put the game in his hands, right? Make it uncomfortable for him. And live with the fact that you're gonna give something up. He's Patrick fucking Mahomes. He's gonna, you know, you're gonna have the perfect play on him. You're gonna have him running around like a sweaty toddler, and he's just gonna find someone wide open, and it's gonna break. It's gonna happen. Yeah.
But make him do it every single time. Yep. And inevitably, you're going to get situations where he runs around and he's throwing the ball parallel to the ground and it hits a guy in the hands and they drop it because they're not good.
Yeah.
One thing I want to say quickly is I always look for little sound bites for the pod, like for podcast titles. You just said one right there, but with Sweaty Toddler. And I'm like, I thought about it for a second. Then I was just like, I don't need SWAT team kicking in those windows right there and taking me in for possessions. Sir, what is this? This Super Bowl to me, though, I know the Chiefs are the underdog, but doesn't this have that weird Patriots Rams feel from 2001 where it's like, you have the team that's on like the cusp of a dynasty, and then you have the team that's like this. I know San Francisco's been good for years, but you know that like they're looking to get that one. I know obviously they've won six before, but doesn't it have that like that weird feel to it where
they even got though that they are good there, offense and the hot play caller, and then it's just like, yeah, but the other team's got that dude. So
That's just where I think of it. All right, so. Ultimate question time for the three of us, because I've teased it all week that I'm going to wait till now to give my winner. Where do we have leaning? Whoever wants to start first, who is your big Super Bowl winner? Who's winning and taking it all?
Is that a C?
That's a
C. Or nine. Okay, cool. I also have Kansas City taking it.
I'm going to give a little bit of a speech here. My heart wants San Francisco because I want to see the team win that hasn't won in a while.
Sure.
But my gut's going San Francisco. My gut is going, don't bet against 15. Yeah, 15. No, Juwan Jennings. My gut's saying go with Juwan Jennings.
The whole heart versus mind thing definitely plays a factor as well, because I'm like, oh, my heart wants San Francisco, but my heart be wrong a lot. So we're just going to go ahead with the noggin on this one and go with that. I think no matter what, though, we're going to
like greatness. Let's go Kansas City.
Yeah, I think it's also because I'm not tired of Kansas City yet. Like, I know a lot of people are so tired of Mahomes. Oh, we're fatigued. Yeah. Oh, I'm like, yeah, but I enjoy football. I enjoy great football. He's great at football. Yeah. It's going to be a while before I get tired of him. And not only that, I just think no matter what happens at the end of this game, we're going to have a Tom Brady comparison. So I know there are people who are rooting against Kansas City because they don't want the whole, like, oh, people got to start comparing Mahomes to Brady even more, la, 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 la. Same thing's going to happen with Brock Purdy if the Niners win. Everyone's going to be like, oh, see, yeah, late round pick and, you know, didn't really start that well and all that. And now look at him, Super Bowl champion in his second year. Oh, look how great he is. It's going to happen regardless. I'm going to go with whatever's going to give me the most entertaining experience, and that's going to be Kansas City winning.
Yep. Greatness. And you know what? Listen, I think that the Tom Brady, Patrick Mahomes debate or whatever, to me, it only bothers you if you let it, because I think that we all know that, you know, even if Patrick Mahomes wins, I think we can all, you know, figure basic arithmetic enough to know that 7 is a bigger number than 3.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I also think that we can see that Patrick Mahomes has started for 6 seasons and Brady started for like 23. Which is it 22 seasons or whatever it is. So there's a lot more time left on that clock. We don't have to do the, oh, which one's the greatest of all time yet. We don't have to do that.
Doesn't have to happen.
Just because other people are doing it doesn't mean we have to engage in it. I don't care about all that. That said, I will say that Patrick Mahomes would probably be a Hall of Famer if he retired today because, yep. I mean, yep. he's that dude. But I agree with you, man. Regardless of whichever one you're more of a fan of, it's going to be like this, because then they're going to say that Brock Purdy's the next Tom Brady, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. Winning in his second season. Oh, look at that. His first one as a starter. Ah, here is the start of the next dynasty, right? Oh, the scrappy guy that could. It's like you're going to get it one way or another. I just want to see great play, man. I want to see a great game. And honestly, I love seeing great players out of their stash. I will say, like, I do agree with you that, you know, it's because I'm not tired of it yet. Mm-hmm. And I also think that there is this part of me that wants to see a guy just continue to be amazing.
Yep.
And push the boundaries. Yep. And to show again that he's one of one. Everybody that you keep is always the same thing as, like, you know, the next Jordan, right? Because I grew up in the, you know, 90s with that. And, you know, I remember when Grant Hill was supposed to be the next Michael Jordan and Kobe was supposed to be the next Michael Jordan. Obviously, Kobe had a great career, but he's not Michael Jordan, right? And yep. So, like, everybody's looking for the next this dude.
Yeah.
Who is completely singular. And to me, it's like, no. Understand what you're watching. Patrick Mahomes, whether he wins this game or not, right? 6 seasons as a starter, and he's been in the AFC Championship every single time and went to the Super Bowl 4 times.
Yep.
We've never seen that. We've never freaking seen that.
Now imagine hating on that because you're a little insecure that your favorite player is being brought up in these conversations. Like, I'm not... Here's my thing. I recognize Tom Brady's greatness to the point that someone else getting 3 rings, 4 rings doesn't all of a sudden make me nervous. I'm not going to disrespect Brady. Like, and it shouldn't. That's perfectly said. It shouldn't, because I'm not insecure about that. Tom Brady is Tom Brady. His accolades, his career speaks for himself. I don't need to, you know, pick up the shield every single time someone wins a championship. I don't need to do that. His resume speaks for itself.
Yep, it's the same thing with LeBron James.
Okay? Exactly.
You can believe that Michael Jordan is the greatest player of all time and appreciate LeBron James. That's what I think. Michael Jordan's greatest player of all time, but I really like LeBron James because I like greatness. Yep. But people get all touchy about stuff and they want to hate because they want to put people down. And it's just like, have more IQ points than that, you know, but you can't ask that of everybody.
I'll say this. I was on the bit of the LeBron hate train for a while because, as a Raptors fan, he ripped my heart out 3 years in a row. So
I mean, that's understandable.
That's different.
I'm not even going to hate on that.
Yeah. Yeah. And the 1 year he left is the year we got our championship. So that's it with me. I've been a little bit on the I don't hate Mahomes. I never have. I just don't like the people that are already saying, you know, oh, he doesn't have to win 7 to pass Tom, or, oh, he's already passed Tom, even if the stats are there. They're both different players. They're both great in their own regards. We're witnessing greatness. That's why we're going with Mahomes. Look, and because here's the thing, too. He goes back-to-back. That's something that's very rare in the NFL nowadays. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, too, with this game, if San Francisco does lose, there's going to be more questions of where do you go from here as opposed to Kansas City losing. Kansas City loses. It's like when the Patriots lost. It's just, oh, you know what? Just regroup, recycle, and we'll get back. Meanwhile, if San Francisco loses, there's going to be a lot of question marks. And I've been saying this for a while, of Kyle Shanahan not being on the hot seat just because, you know, it's always, oh, we're going to reward for everything that they've done, but they still haven't gotten it. It's just like one of those, when is enough for them. So that's why I feel like, too, this game, there's so many different storylines that are going to come out of it. And as to the whole Brady and Mahomes stuff, I'm just going to say this. Just ignore the Nick Wrights of the world. Ignore the, I'm going to say Get Up just because Get Up's just a hot take factory, in my opinion. And you know what? Just go about your opinions and listen to the three of us talk football. Why? Because we're all three very well-educated gentlemen on the sport, and we also love it, and we cover it, and we're dudes with Wi-Fi who love talking about it.
For sure.
That's my little soliloquy to end it. But anyway, gentlemen, it was a blast as always getting to talk to the two of you. McGarvin's been here all playoffs long. We appreciate it a lot. Kyrie, first appearance in, I believe, since about November, so it's been a little bit of time since you've been here, but it's always great having you on, guys. We started this back in September when Brianna Pierre and I were previewing week one. And now this is the last podcast where football is played, but the offseason train is going to continue to roll. But anyway, guys, we're on the road to 300. The offseason is going to be here next week. Just embrace it and enjoy the Super Bowl. Have a good night.
Jaden Daniels over Bye. Everything.
I'm Jeff Woods, and I'm shining a light on music and the rock stars who make it.
He just was one of those people. He stood out.
He was a magic guy. He really was a magic guy. We all have force. He had the same amount of force as we all have.
This was before Led Zeppelin. Robert was full on. I mean, he was Led Zeppelin without the band behind him. He had the hair, the jeans, the whole thing, you know. And he was amazing.
The Records and Rockstars podcast, heard around the world and yours to hear wherever you get podcasts. All the episodes from JeffWoodsRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Logan Anderson, host of the Say the Damn Score podcast. On my show, I deep dive into the sports broadcasting business by, you guessed it, talking to sportscasters. The show has featured big names like Bob Costas, Kenny Albert, and Vern Lundquist, as well as many up-and-coming broadcasters who you may not know yet, but you will know soon. Whether you're looking for professional development as a sportscaster, different career paths, or if you just want to be entertained by hearing some of the best storytellers in the world tell their own stories, this podcast is for you. You can subscribe to the podcast on all major podcast platforms, or you can visit our website, SayTheDamnScore.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.